going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The mindset is definitely everything, right? If you have the mindset to work, the mindset is you really enjoy and love playing football, that fits our building, that works for us, that works with the guys that we already have here. We have a ton of guys in our locker room already who love football, and I just believe that when you love the game of football, right, we're gonna get your best. Right, when you go through those difficult days, when it's going to be hard moments in training camp, hard moments throughout the season, I feel like your love for football will give you that edge to keep pushing through when the difficult moments come.
All right, that's D'Amico Ryans talking on Saturday after the draft for the Texans was over. 9-player class, and we're going to hear from D'Amico on some of these guys here in just a second. It does seem like, Seth, that, and we'll hear from D'Amico here in a second, but when he gets asked about any of these guys, it's always the mental, the psychological, the love of football gets brought up first before any of the physical traits with any of these guys.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole, you're especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think they're trying to instill a culture. There's a culture on the defensive side of the ball. There's not a culture on the offensive side of the ball. And one other big thing that came out in this draft is, man, the Casario has a lot of respect for certain colleges that coach a certain way and teach a certain way. Iowa State is certainly one of those. And you draft two wide receivers out of Iowa State to add to a guy that
and he mentions Matt
Hutchinson.
Campbell by name a few times in that press conference.
Yeah.
Coach.
PJ Fleck at Minnesota, but also the offensive line coach there, Brian Callahan, has actually put out some good offensive linemen who have exceeded their high school recruiting status.
Yeah.
They've developed some guys there. So I think with Ursary, they like that. And those programs, and including Rutgers, I mean, Greg Schiano's the coach at Rutgers. They drafted Keontae Hamilton, the defensive tackle, in the 7th round. Nick mentioned them. He kept mentioning how they coach him hard, and you want guys that come into your program that are willing to accept coaching. I mean, Kamari Lassiter, they said the same thing about him when they drafted Kamari Lassiter. He's got from a defensive players at Georgia get coached hard, and Lassiter was one of the lead dogs at that program. They almost, I think they've got a bunch of colleges out there that they almost like to think of as their AAA. And they feel like they're getting a certain type of player when they get them from those schools.
There's definitely head coaches that they look at the collegiate level, and they say that guy coaches a lot like our head coach coaches. They look for the same thing in players. I think Iowa State and Minnesota, too, not to pick on those schools. I almost think if you're going there to play football, you better love football. If you're in Ames, Iowa, and up in Minnesota for most of the year, you better love football.
Well, and you know, Casario said it respectfully, but he talked about Eastern Kentucky, where Jaden Higgins started out. Is like, hey, that's it's kind of a developmental school, you know.
Right.
It's not. Yeah, you know, Jaden Higgins spent 2 years at Eastern Kentucky before he transferred to Iowa State, and he had to improve and, you know, really actually work at it. There's evidence of him actually having worked at it.
Yep. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the two Iowa State wide receivers, Jaden Higgins in the 2nd round, top of the 2nd round, 34th overall, near the top. And then Jalen Noel, the wide receiver out of Iowa State.
Both guys, Jaden and Jalen, I mean, terrific men, first and foremost. And you got two different guys, right? You talk about playmaking ability, Jalen's ability to stretch the field and the deep end of the part of the field. And you have Jaden, just a big target, very similar. I know a lot of people say very similar to Nico and what he's able to do. But you get a receiver his stature and with his catch radius, just opens up a lot of things for us offensively that I know, you know, all of our guys are excited about. CJ should be excited about, you know, the targets that he has to throw to.
All right, so the
athleticism of the speed underneath and then the deep speed that Jaden Higgins has, it mirrors what they already have on the roster in Nico Collins and Christian Kirk. So there's a little bit of redundancy there in a good way. At any given time, some of these guys are going to get injured. You know, Higgins and Noel still have to prove that they can play in the NFL.
Sure.
I don't want to get ahead of myself here. You know, Lamont accused us of calling Jaden Higgins Nico 5.0.
Did he?
The comp before the draft was Nico Collins.
Yeah.
We were talking about him, he's physically a lot like Nico Collins.
Right,
The body, the size, the speed, everything else, he's very, very similar to Nico Collins. So you hope that he can be as good as Nico Collins, but that's the type of player he is, an ex-receiver type.
Did you have a preference at 34? Because Luther Burden was there as well. He went with the very next pick, I think, to Chicago. I think it was interesting that the Titans and the Raiders both traded out of their spots immediately after Higgins went off the board, and that Chicago took a receiver with that next pick in Luther Burden. Did you have a preference going into that pick as to the receiver you wanted there, if you wanted a receiver at all?
Luther Burden was talked about a lot more, so he had the more name brand appeal.
Yeah,
I didn't think that the Texans would be into Luther Burden just because there were also a lot of people questioning whether Luther Burden was a guy that really loved practice, and there was that one anonymous quote that he'd show up on Saturdays, but that was
Monday through Saturday. Saturdays. Yeah, yeah.
So you always take those with a grain of salt, but if there was any truth to it, I suspected that the Texans wouldn't be into Luther Burden.
Yeah.
I would have. Now, I did want more speed because I'm not banking on Tank Dell being back this year.
Yeah.
And if he does come back from that injury, I don't think he's going to be the same version of himself right away. So I was kind of feeling like, okay, we don't go it. Now, before anybody says anything, Jaden Higgins is very fast. It's just a different type of speed. It's a build-up speed.
Yep.
You know, like if you look at his athletic profile, all the straight ahead speed stuff is really, really good. When it comes down to the shorter area stuff, he's not as quick as a guy like Luther Burden or Jalen Noel.
Yep. Yeah. I think it's, you know, them drafting Noel, you know, later on in the third round that night kind of takes some of the teeth out of the Burden or Higgins question, because you did end up going and getting some speed. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the Texans' second pick on Friday night, Arionte Ursary, the offensive lineman out of Minnesota.
Yeah, Tay, you know, with Tay, we had a guy who brings, you know, that physicality, the mindset that I really think helps offensive linemen be good at their job. He's done a great job of playing left tackle and still has room to grow and develop, so excited about adding him.
Okay, so excited about adding Ursary, who that'll be interesting to see, Seth, who he competes with and where he winds up if he gets on the field. If you had to, I don't know, do you think he gets on the field gets on the field? Do you think he is a starter at some point, barring injury for this team?
Ursary?
Yes.
I think that,
I know it's way early.
Like Blake Fisher was a developmental guy. I don't think Ursary is as developmental as Blake Fisher was, just because Ursary is massive. Like, he is a big dude, whereas Blake Fisher is tall but kind of a lithe and lean guy. And with Blake Fisher, there are some things that he needs to work on to play with better pad level and to learn how to play with his body type. With Ursary, I think that he can show up, and he doesn't have to. It'd be great if he gets better knee bend along the way, but I don't think he really has to have better knee bend. There's lots of guys that play, if you're massive without great knee bend, you can kind of punch down as an offensive tackle as long as you're big enough and athletic enough, and he's very athletic. So the thing that would stop me from saying he's going to start year one is that I think Cam Robinson's been a very steady and competent starter at left tackle.
Yeah.
I think the more likely scenario is that Ursary ends up being the left tackle in 2026.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Like, I think in a perfect world, Ursary and Blake Fisher are your two tackles moving forward for the next few years after this season. After this season. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the other option would be it also just depends on. You ask me if any of these guys are going to start or what the configuration of the offensive line is going to look like. I don't know if Titus Howard's going to be playing tackle or guard.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to forecast for me right now exactly what the starting offensive line is going to look
like. Yeah, no, it's super intriguing, man. Like, it does make like that, you know, the beginning of camp, where a beginning of training camp or maybe even OTAs, who knows, where you go, okay, these are the this is who they're trotting out. This is the first five linemen that are on the field. I have no idea what permutation of guys that's going to be, you know?
Yeah, and I guess it's that wide open. I mean, if I have to handicap it, if I'm just saying likelihood, I think that Cam Robinson's the starting left tackle, and they're hoping that Ursary just develops and improves and ends up becoming the left tackle next year. But he might end up doing really well at right tackle, and it becomes a competition between Blake Fisher and Ursary, and Titus Howard is playing guard. Or Blake Fisher might look awesome in camp this year, and they're very comfortable having Ursary just bide his time and learn how to be a left tackle. And at any point, one of them is going to play because of injury.
I think the safest bet on the offensive line for like week one, barring injury, is Cam Robinson starting at left tackle. I think the safest bet as to who is going to be on the field in week one is Titus Howard.
Yeah,
he's either going to be right tackle or left guard. We just don't know which position. I feel strongly that Cam Robinson, if he plays, will be left tackle.
One thing I've noticed is that I think Caserio, and this comes from times we've talked to him and otherwise, I feel like he's got a much more positive appraisal of how Titus Howard has looked at left guard than I do. I won't say we or anybody else, but I'm not as sold that he's actually been an asset at left guard, whereas, Caserio feels differently.
Yep. Let's skip to day three here, and the first pick of day three, the Texans take one of their extra third round picks. They add two third round picks next season, going into Saturday. They take one of those and they move into the fourth round to take USC running back Woody Marks, who's more of a third down kind of guy. John Harris got very excited about this pick, stood up, banged the table with his hands. He really liked the pick. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the selection of Woody Marks.
Really like Woody and what he's able to provide. Really like him out of the backfield, catching the football. Really great hands. Really has that ability to make guys miss at the line of scrimmage and the ability to play behind his pass, play physical. So like the addition of him to our running back room.
They needed some juice at the running back position. You know, Damian Pierce has been their backup. They say publicly they are effusive in their praise of Damian Pierce, which never seems to translate into how he's used or even if he's used with this team on Sundays.
Right. You know? And I think that with Damian, that's the big wild card in all of it, is we know that Caserio and D'Amico really like Damian Pierce, that Damian Pierce looked a whole lot better when Pep Hamilton was calling the plays. Then a new offensive coordinator came in. That offensive coordinator gets fired as Damian Pierce wasn't doing a whole lot. And I'm guessing they're really eager to see exactly what Damian Pierce does with Nick Caley's scheme, whatever it looks like.
Yep.
And so Damian is, doesn't project to be, or Damian isn't as good a receiver as Woody Marks projects to be.
Correct.
So that's the intriguing part of it is, man, if Woody Marks can pick up pass protection and everything else like that, you love the thought of having him out there on third down. He's got more of an explosive element to him than a Gumbawale, perhaps.
He was one of the guys like Jalen Smith in the third round, Woody Marks in the fourth round. I'll say Graham Mertz also, the quarterback in the sixth round, who feel like they were drafted above where the experts had them, by and large.
Yeah.
You know, if you did a consensus big board, in fact, there is one out there. We should go look. Those guys were all well below where the Texans selected them. But the Texans, obviously, they're drafting for role on the team more so than just the overall player.
Well, and that's where, when it gets down to the fourth round and later especially, and really in the third round, I feel like it's just all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's going to be scheme, your team, how you like these players. Nick had said that their board is probably smaller than a lot of other teams.
Yeah.
So I think that they might just value different things. And that's not specific to the Texans. That's just across the league.
Yeah.
It's just all over the place.
Here's Jalen Reed. This is Jalen Reed, the sixth-round pick out of Penn State. Safety, good college player. This was Jalen Reed getting the phone call from Nick Caserio on Saturday that the team was going to make him a Houston Texan.
Hello?
Jalen, Nick Caserio with the Texans. How you doing, bud?
Let's do it.
Congratulations. We're going to turn the pick in. We're excited to have
Let's
you.
Do it.
You're a good football
Let's
player.
Do it.
So,
Let's do it.
Yeah, let me. I'm
Let's
put,
do it.
I'm going to put you on.
Let's do it.
I'm going to put you on
Let's
Coach
do
Ryan's.
It.
Here's Coach Ryan's.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jalen, congrats, man.
Hey, get the Texans hat. Get the Texans hat. Let's do it. Appreciate it, Coach. Man, appreciate
you,
it, Coach.
You get that Texans hat ready, man. We're fired up to have you.
All right, bet. Let's do it, Coach. Let's do it.
All right, I'm passing you over to our owner here, Kelvin. Yes.
All right, bet. Let's do it. Let's do it. Man, let's go. I'm ready. Let's go.
Give everyone a hug there that helps get you here, okay, bud? And we'll see you soon.
I got you.
Congrats.
Jalen, I counted 14 let's do it on that call.
One of the big assets for a DeMeco defense was that Jalen Reed did have a couple of unnecessary roughnesses in college.
The Texans are like, we don't know how this guy made it to the sixth round.
DeMeco wants the dirty dozen out there, man.
Yes.
He just wants guys that got to harness there. You got to harness all that energy and focus them in the right direction.
I love that. Oh, dude, CJ Gardner-Johnson has a pupil on this team now, you know? Like, I'm going to show you how to really unnecessarily rough people at the NFL level, kid. Oh, that's great. They drafted a quarterback, Graham Mertz, initially from Wisconsin. He transferred to Florida. He's been in Florida the last couple years. Tore his ACL midway through this season. Was having a decent year before he tore his ACL, though he was holding off DJ Lagway all year long, kid from right here in the Houston area who's going to be eventually a top pick in the draft. Mertz goes in the sixth round. The Texans trade up slightly to go get him. Here was Nick Caserio with his thoughts on the newest quarterback for the Texans, Graham Mertz.
Got a lot of playing experience. You know, had some success at Wisconsin. They kind of went through the coaching transition there a little bit, and he felt like the best opportunity for him was at Florida, and then he played there his first year, and then, you know, he got hurt a little bit, obviously, this year. But good demeanor, good presence, has good leadership, good size, you know, throws a pretty good ball. So type of player that we felt had some traits and characteristics of that position that we wanted to work with, you know, and we had him here in the building and he was as advertised. So, you know, we'll see how it goes when he gets here.
That is interesting. I had not seen that he was one of their visits to the building, Graham Mertz. You know, a lot of those get reported.
The thing about Mertz is that it's funny. When he was at Wisconsin, he's kind of a turnover machine. He threw double-digit interceptions both years. Then he gets to Florida and ends up – he had like a 239 pass attempt without an interception streak at one point. He dialed that part of it back. But then the knock on him is that he's a little too conservative and safe with the football. He's not as aggressive downfield as you want him
to be. Make up your mind.
So he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. I think that – he's the biggest thing is less about Graham Mertz, I think, but just the strategy of drafting a quarterback or especially trading up to get a quarterback. If you go back to the Patriots, they followed a strategy that I like, which is every year Tom Brady was the starting quarterback for the Patriots. Every other year on average, they would draft a quarterback.
Yeah.
And obviously they didn't need a quarterback, but it's the most valuable and important position in sports. And I think as a methodology, you should always be drafting quarterbacks for it, at the very least. You don't have to pay Davis Mills $5 to $10 million next year to keep him around as your backup quarterback.
The best case scenario here with Graham Mertz, you look at all these guys, what's the best case and worst case? Best case scenario is Graham Mertz shows them enough to where they're comfortable with him being their backup quarterback next year. They're going to need to go cheap at some positions, and backup quarterback might be one of them, because I tell you this right now, this a year from now at this time, their quarterback position will be one of the most expensive positions, not just on the team, but in the league, if C.J. Stroud gets the contract extension that we hope he deserves this time next year. You know,
he can run a little bit.
Mertz?
Yeah.
Not on a bad ACL, he can't. Yeah.
Well, ACL, no big deal. Yeah. That's the Tommy John of the NFL.
That's right. All right. So Peyton Pendergast, that's our draft class. There's a couple other guys. Kevontae Hamilton, D-tackle out of Rutgers. Luke Lachey, tight end out of Iowa. If you're going to take a flyer on a tight end, do it on one from Iowa with the third to last pick of the draft. All right, Bill Belichick did an interview with CBS Sunday Morning that was incredibly awkward. We will play the most awkward – well, we'll play a lot of this interview for you, but the most awkward part had to do with his relationship with his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson. And you really get a feel from this interview – just how much she's got him on a string. We'll get to that and some other interesting nuggets from that interview coming up next.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, we interrupt this draft talk to dip in on Bill Belichick's awkward Sunday morning interview, or ran on Sunday morning with CBS Sunday morning. Bill Belichick has a book coming out called The Art of Winning. So he's on the promotional tour for his book here. I'm guessing largely organized by his girlfriend slash whatever she is professionally for him.
Social media advisor.
Yeah,
or whatever role she's a PR liaison.
Yeah.
Is how she's acting at UNC.
Jordan Hudson is her name. It's Bill Belichick, 73 years old. She's in her mid-20s, and they've been dating for several months now.
And just to set the stage for those of you who didn't see the interview, Bill Belichick is being interviewed by CBS Sunday morning or whatever it's called. He's wearing a tattered old Navy sweatshirt.
It's got a hole in it.
Naval Academy sweatshirt. Yeah. It's got a tear in one of the chests.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, is sitting off to the side in a chair, kind of like a lot of people have. They've got their assistant or whatever sitting off camera. But she apparently during the interview entered camera quite a few to either advise or shut things down.
Yeah, she was very involved, so involved that they pointed it out in the piece. Here is Bill Bell. Here's the piece on his girlfriend. And take a listen at the end where he gets asked a question that she takes great issue with.
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson, his creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that's the philosophy.
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on, though Hudson has recently posted about it on Instagram.
Well, you would think if you were in a relationship, like that's a, like if people ask me, like Amy, like how did you guys meet? I'd love telling that story.
That's an easy, hey, let's show the human side of Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Plus they've already told that story. Supposedly they met on an airplane.
Right,
they were sitting next to each other on an airplane.
Yeah.
And he was curious about the philosophy book she was reading.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah.
And they sparked up a conversation that way. This is one of those things where somebody says no comment, where you wonder, like, wait a second, is there more to this?
What,
like,
am I missing? What, yeah.
Why are we not allowed to talk about this thing that you've already publicly talked about?
Yeah.
It, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of when Dan Patrick interviewed Kyler Murray before the draft, and people were wondering, you know, Dan Patrick said you keep looking over to your dad every time you want to answer a question. It was like, poor, I don't know if Bill Belichick can make it as a number one overall quarterback draft pick. Because if he can't make it through a simple interview, basically a feel-good interview, without looking off to the side for advice.
To his girlfriend, who is 50 years his junior. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Kyler Murray stuff was way less creepier than the Bill Belichick
interview. It was weird, man. It was weird. So she's chiming in there. I guess this book, The Art of Winning, there's... And it's about Belichick's career. So this is almost like it sounds like, Seth, it's almost his, it's like his biography, but all the football stuff. Like all the look through the prism of football. No mention of Robert Kraft at all. Not a single, Jordan Hudson gets mentioned in the book. Girlfriend of like a year mentioned in the book. Robert Kraft, his boss, not mentioned. He was asked about that.
I have to ask about Robert Kraft because 24 years together, 6 Super Bowls, unless I'm wrong, he's not in this book. How come?
He's not. Well, again, it's about my life lessons in football, and it's really more about the ones that I've experienced directly.
But he's not even in the acknowledgement section.
Correct.
Okay, this is why I admire Belichick. That's an easy one when you write a book. Your editor, especially with people that or a lot of people that haven't written books before, they write everything down and it ends up being 800 pages.
Yeah.
So the editor has to cut out a bunch of stuff. That's an easy one that if Belichick wanted to, he could have just said, well, you know what? We couldn't put everything in the book, so there you go. But he didn't.
The acknowledgement
to do that.
Him not even being in the acknowledgments, though. That's just.
I'd have to know how many people are in the acknowledgments.
Well, he mentioned his girlfriend in the acknowledgments. He did.
He's known her a long time.
He did.
Sean.
Yeah.
She's been an integral part of his life.
She's known her like 10 months. If you're wondering maybe where this is all coming from, and by the way, some of this you're going to hear on the Pettycast tomorrow for sure. Here was Belichick when he was asked about cutting ties with the Patriots. Was it a firing or was it a mutual decision?
Do you feel like you were treated with dignity and respect when you were let go by Robert Kraft?
Yeah, well, it was a mutual decision for us to part ways.
He said fired.
It was a mutual decision.
Okay. And some of the veil gets pulled back now on why Robert Kraft may not have been acknowledge. You know what, Robert Kraft, if you're feeling down about it, Robert Kraft, man, let's acknowledge him. If Bill Belichick's not going to acknowledge you, we will at least acknowledge you for the fountain of content that you were a few years ago when you decided to go to the Orchids of Asia Spa in Jupiter, Florida back in the day. That and when you dated, boy, it must be a Patriot thing, when you dated that very young girl who was trying to break into acting and you were her reading partner on those scripts. That was good stuff, too.
Yeah, and well...
Yeah, exactly.
Kraft, remember when they did that Patriots documentary? When they did that Patriots documentary a couple years ago or last year?
Yes.
Belichick was barely in it, right?
Yeah,
you watched it. I didn't watch it.
I watched the whole thing, yes.
And Belichick was barely in it?
He was... I mean, it's hard to avoid the head coach. He was definitely not featured in a way or as much as the head coach would be. And there was... This was the big thing, Seth, is that Robert Kraft directly placed blame on Belichick for some of the Super Bowls and seasons that went wrong. You know, like when I forget which Super Bowl it was. It was the one they lost to the Eagles where he inexplicably benched Malcolm Butler for the Super Bowl and Nick Foles goes on and wins the MVP. Nick Foles wins MVP of a Super Bowl that Tom Brady threw for like 500 yards in. So Kraft openly blamed Belichick for things in that documentary as well. Clearly it feels like a damaged relationship between those two guys. I'm going to go out on a limb. Yeah.
I was looking for the quote where Kraft said that he fired Belichick, but the problem is everything that comes up now is based on this interview alone. I always got the sense that Belichick, he is who he is and he doesn't try to smooth anything over or anything.
No.
And I'm guessing that I always got the feel that he didn't really respect Bob Kraft that much.
I don't know.
That's just my feel.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true or not. I always got the feel it was almost like Kraft is kind of an annoyance that he has to deal with because you got to have an owner, but that he didn't. I just never felt like he really respected Bob Kraft.
I don't know. It's hard to read anything with Belichick because he's so stone-faced. This I know. Ted Johnson said this. Ted Johnson said this the day that Seth Wickersham article came out back in 2017.
Yeah.
About how Brady wanted Garoppolo. It was about all the dirt behind the scenes with the Patriots at that time. It was in 2017. And I will never forget Ted coming into Twin Peaks on 290 before the show, like the cat ate the canary, ready to dig into this story. And Ted's first words he said when he dug into that story on the air was, "Nobody is more petty than Bill Belichick. Nobody."
Yeah. Well, yeah, Belichick's... Well, that's why so many of his acolytes have failed. It's because they don't understand. You don't get to emulate a genius and all of his personality traits, because those are things that they get away with because they're a genius.
Yeah.
So a lot of the questionable interpersonal side of Belichick, it worked for him because he was a genius. It's kind of like not everybody can get away with being Deion Sanders unless you're Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
You can't, and Deion has a public persona versus a private persona.
Yep.
You can't get away with emulating Deion unless you're as good as Deion.
That's right.
And you can't emulate being Bill Belichick unless you're as good as Bill Belichick.
Yeah. Shadur found that out the hard way this weekend. Right now on TV on First Take, is what happened to Shadur Sanders fair? That's the question they're discussing right now. And Lewis Riddick is talking. I will go back and listen to this.
Look, he had a strategy of tanking the draft for many, many teams. And if anything, his strategy worked out too effectively.
Well,
he was actively and willingly sabotaging his relationship with multiple teams.
Oh,
and it seems to have worked out.
And Riddick,
you got to give him credit for that.
He did.
I'm tired of people not giving him the credit for executing it executing it too well.
Flawless, yeah. The only thing that would have been better is he became an undrafted free agent. Then he could pick where he goes at that point. Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I disagree with your viewpoint on Shadur. You have 30-plus-year-old males getting butthurt about a 21-year-old male's self-confidence. Personal feelings should be kept out of business.
Okay, this is what you don't understand, young man, and this is where you need to be careful. could you show me the deficit of confident quarterbacks in the NFL? It's odd. I didn't realize that all of them were trembling with insecurity and self-doubt.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's very, very interesting that the things that people are criticizing Shadur Sanders for, you interpret as confidence. Like, not turning your music off when you're at an NFL facility on your headphones, or taking a FaceTime call while you're in a meeting with a head coach, or just flat out, you and your father saying that there's teams that you're going to dictate terms of where you're going to go or whatever, like blatantly disrespecting some franchises. What part of that is confidence? Because the things people are complaining about with Shadur Sanders are not confidence.
Seth,
it's much different than confidence.
It's professionalism. That's what it is. I mean, he was unprofessional in those meetings, according to, some anonymous people. The anonymity has been pulled back. Like Todd McShay mentioned Brian Daboll by name on his podcast. So some of the anonymity has been pulled back. But whether it's anonymous or not, and this is what people need to understand, is that whether anonymous or not, all that talk of what Shadur is like in those meetings, it played out in the draft. He was drafted in the fifth round when he'd been mocked in the first round for practically every single mock draft. And you're right about this. Confidence versus professionalism is a distinction that needs to be made. Seth, I will share this take right now. I've only ever shared it with you, but I'll share it on the air right now. The main thing I'm happy about with C.J. Stroud during his draft journey is he was able to kind of push his confidence to the back burner. You know, that I'm glad that he kind of showed himself to be meek and really manipulatable in all the meetings he had with NFL teams. I'm really glad.
It's the most curious and weird opinion that I keep seeing is that they didn't like his confidence. I'm like, they're all confident.
Yeah.
Every single NFL quarterback is incredibly confident.
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
They
didn't like his confidence.
This has elicited some of the worst takes from people who I think are otherwise smart people, you know?
It's what happens when you spend 3 months saying that anybody who suggests Shadur Sanders isn't going to go in the first round is an idiot and wrong and they're stupid. And then all of a sudden, all the people that you've been calling stupid and clickbaity and hot take artists, when all of a sudden all the things that they were saying appear to have some validity, at least. You can either acknowledge that you were way off, or you can double down on absurd takes and weird, like, things that just don't make any sense at all.
Yep.
Like, confident. Like, yeah, that somehow, Shadur's confident. Right, oh, right. I get it.
Yeah.
That's why nobody wants a confident NFL quarterback.
No, that would be
These teams will all tell you the first thing they don't want is a confident NFL quarterback.
That would be absolutely silly. My favorite version of a quarterback was the one where Sam Darnold was seeing ghosts when he was with the Jets.
Yeah.
Completely lacking in confidence. That's what we want.
Or that college kid whose hand was shaking when he had to go in. Yes, that he's guy, got it. That's the it factor there.
How did that guy not get picked first? All right, sounds from the draft this weekend, including the most hyperbolic, absurd introduction for a rookie in the history of the NFL. We've got that for you coming up next. All right, we'll circle back to some of your texts here in just a minute. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. We'll find out what the guys got going on In the Loop today. Some good draft talk, I'm sure, and a whole lot of other stuff. This was, get comfortable, people, because the magnificent Gladstone is about to speak. The GM for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who pulled off a trade that I would say has gotten more positive coverage than negative coverage. People like the big aggressive move to move up from 5-2 to draft Travis Hunter. We'll see if he plays out to be as transformational as the magnificent Gladstone, James Gladstone, the GM of the Jags.
I do like the actual trade up.
You do.
That's a good kind of, it's like a Will Anderson type of aggressive trade up for a guy you really love.
Right, yeah. Right. Now, that said, I don't recall Nick Caserio nor D'Amico Ryans introducing either C.J. Stroud or Will Anderson as somebody who is going to be able to change and transform the sport of football. Football is a sport that drives belief in us all. I don't want to spoil things. Here's the magnificent Gladstone introducing. Keep in mind, this is the introduction of Travis Hunter. So he's sitting next to him as all this is being said, and Liam Cohen, the head coach, is sitting on the other side of Travis Hunter. Take it away, Gladstone.
Well, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar, and really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person, he's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him.
Okay.
This is what I want to say to James
field, Wait. To the city, to the game of football itself.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up. Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
You nailed it, Seth. Earlier we played that clip, and Seth, you said, felt genuine, felt unrehearsed till the very end. Well, it felt kind of rehearsed, but it felt like he definitely not notes or a telestrator. He was speaking, you know, without any benefit of a script, but Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting.
Yeah, that's the canned line at the end.
Corny joke at the end.
You know that
he
had rehearsed that speech for at least 2 hours in front of the mirror.
Yes, sir.
He's a metaphor. Travis Hunter is a metaphor for everything that we would aspire to be, not just as football fans, but as human beings.
That to me was the part at the end there where he says that it's a statement.
Yeah.
All Travis has to do is be himself, but this pick that the magnificent Gladstone has pulled off. Behold, as I turn the fifth overall pick into not just Travis Hunter, but a statement on the state of football and transforming the sport itself via this vessel, Travis Hunter.
I'm surprised that he didn't have a magician's curtain in front of him that would like drop down and there'd be smoke coming up.
Dude.
And sitting there was Travis Hunter,
elevated
from a from underneath the stage,
something
just kind of popped up on a hole out of the floor. Yeah,
he at least should have emerged out of a box at the very least.
He should have turned a dove into Travis Hunter. He should have had a dump sitting there in the seat next to him. And then all of a sudden, in a big plume of smoke, Travis Hunter appears.
Travis Hunter is there. Yes. What are you doing, Gladstone? Come on, man. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And then they bring Blake Bortles out and cut him in half.
For real.
Yeah, yeah.
Gladstone, no!
That's, yeah, good for him. Good for achieving the impossible. That's by trading up, you know, and like giving up good, enough to trade up, and you achieved the impossible. You drafted a player in the NFL draft.
I got no issue with the trade, and I think it's actually, as a Texan fan, I'm excited about it because it makes those games against Jacksonville a whole lot of fun. Yeah. Whatever role it is that Travis Hunter ends up playing will be a whole lot of fun. If they put him at corner, I'm here to watch him go against Nico Collins or Christian Kirk or whoever. If they put him at receiver, I sure as hell am here to watch him go up against Derek Stingley Jr. a couple of times a year. You know,
I was a big fan of the first round picks of the AFC South. I think you bring a lot of juice to the division.
Yep.
You've got a tight end at the Colts, then Tyler Warren, that maybe could unlock, you know, maybe Anthony Richardson will complete 55% of his passes
maybe.
This year.
You never know.
You know, they might get him up to 1982 level of quarterback performance.
Yeah, man.
And Travis Hunter obviously is Travis Hunter, and then Cam Ward, we just don't know. So I'm excited about it.
A lot of text coming in on the reaction to discussing Shedeur Sanders. Confidence should not be confused with arrogance. Exactly. We had a texter say that this is a case of 30-plus-year-old men getting upset with the confidence of a 21-year-old man.
Yeah.
And I think this text kind of encapsulates, like, don't conflate confidence with arrogance or lack of professionalism, which is what all the reports and all the anonymous conjecture has been. Texter says, wear headphones to your next job interview. See if you get hired.
Right, you know? Right. You know, and he was actively, like, this is the problem. And this is where Deion had a misstep. Because remember, Shedeur doesn't have an agent. Deion's advising him in all of this. Is that they treated the process like Shedeur was a slam dunk top five pick. Right. When you turn down interviews or you tank the interviews or what have you, you can get away with that when you're a top five pick, like a guy that's just so good as a quarterback prospect that somebody's going to take him or trade up to get him. And they just misgauged just what he was.
Yep.
And then you put him into, when you try to compare it to any other quarterback situation, it's impossible because I can't ever remember a fringe first round prospect acting this way.
No.
It's just completely different than anybody's ever acted. And it's, you're right. It's the confidence. There's, every single good quarterback in the NFL is very, very, very confident.
Right.
Nobody is put off by his confidence.
No.
It's one of the weirdest things I keep seeing continually is that, oh, people don't like his confidence. Well, I don't know what that means.
The funny thing, too, with Mel Kiper this weekend, other than the fact that every time a quarterback got drafted or Shedeur came up, he's screaming at the screen, shaking his fists about how the league can't evaluate quarterbacks for the last 50 years, he wouldn't stop. It was endless on ESPN every single time. And Reese Davis eventually, I've never seen this happen before. Reese Davis eventually kind of had to step in and be like, all right, we got it. It's time to move. He's been drafted. Like, this is where he's going now. Like, it's time to move forward.
The key, Mel, is not putting a value judgment on whether those
three guys are
right or wrong. They did.
Yep.
So now, whenever you're in circumstances in life, whether you like them, whether you don't like them, whether they're fair or whether they're unfair, you might have to deal with them.
That's
and
right.
Now Shedeur Sanders has to deal with
it.
And for whatever reason, whether he played a minute microscopic percentage, 0%, or it's a legitimate criticism of the way he conducted himself during the draft process, this was the result.
Yeah.
Now he has an opportunity to answer it. I think yelling at the NFL about it is not
right. There's not a quarterback that was Boomer Esiason was not happy when he was the second round pick.
Tom Brady
was not happy.
They dropped.
How'd they turn out?
Nobody's arguing that.
That can happen. The NFL has been clueless for 50 years when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks. Clueless.
All
no idea what they're doing in terms of evaluating quarterback. That's proof. There's proof of that.
How many times
we know exactly what we're talking about with quarterbacks? They don't.
That one at the end.
Wait, he said we know what
we're
talking about.
We know what we're
they
talking
don't.
About with quarterbacks. The NFL doesn't.
Oh, come on.
This is Mel Kiper, who said back in 2010 he would retire if Jimmy Clausen was not a marquee quarterback in however many years. I don't know how many years it was.
I'm astounded that he would say that at the very end. Like that honestly, that's the biggest stark difference
they don't.
Between a lot of, you know, like draft quote-unquote experts or what have you, is that they have way more confidence in their picks than the people who actually do it for a living, because those people understand there's so much uncertainty in it. But Mel can get up there and draft Jimmy Clausen number one overall and not get fired.
I've never seen Reese Davis like that before on the stage. Like, Mel was trying to jump in, and Reese wasn't going to let. Reese was going to get his point out there.
It was unbearable at a certain point, to where I started watching the NFL Network because it was just – it was the Shador Sanders debate show that every time I turned over to ESPN. So an NFL Network, they would talk about it, but it was just they would talk about the picks too.
Yep. Hey, fellas.
Howdy.
What's going on? John Lopez, Reggie Atatula. Gentlemen, it's great to see you as always.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah. Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, pretty man, good. Fantastic.
Pretty good weekend.
Good. That's good.
Yeah.
We've been, Shador has found his way onto the show a couple times. Mm-hmm. What was your gut feel on the Texans this weekend?
They have a type, actually, and I thought of that, and then I saw Seth's video, and I'm like, Seth and I are thinking the same way here. So
that's usually a good sign.
Yeah, that is a good mm-hmm. sign, but they definitely have a type. I liked it overall. Obviously, you can pick some nits here and there, but...
The people seem to, the report card guys seem to like, what'd you think of it, Reggie?
Yeah, I thought that it was a overall good draft. I think it really solidified some of their beliefs, or at least made it clear what some of their beliefs are, mm-hmm. and I think also... It reminded me just how well their roster is already built. Because I was looking at some of these, I'm like, why are you doing that? I'm like, well, I guess I could see how you do that because mm-hmm. of the circumstances that you've put yourself in overall over years past and then obviously in free agency in some places. So, no, I understood where it was, and it just gave me a general excitedness about the way that this roster is constructed.
Yeah.
I guess the thing that I'm left, like it was my gut feel afterwards, is that I'm still left wanting because – even though it would have been irrational and even though I would have gotten ahead of myself, if they'd been super aggressive on the offensive line and if they'd managed to nab an offensive lineman in the first round, I would have felt better about the upside of the offensive line. Whereas now I'm in the same boat I was beforehand, which is, well, listen, we just got to wait and see exactly what they do, and we won't find out until September.
Do you think this is probably a topic I may be stealing from your guys' show by asking this. We haven't really brought this up. Like, mm-hmm. does the Ursary pick pretty much nailed down Tytus Howard being a guard?
Yes.
Left guard, do you think?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it nails it down, but I think it would be trending big time
that
way.
Yeah, I mean, probably nothing's nailed down. Like, this whole thing's a fluid process, but it does feel... But, you know, again, to Seth's point, who knows if a guard had slipped to them at number... Like, if Tyler Booker or Donovan Jackson are sitting there at 25, mm-hmm. then we're talking about Tytus at tackle, so who knows?
I think you might still be talking about Tytus at guard if you're talking about getting your best five out there.
The rookie at right guard, Tytus at left guard. Maybe.
I'm like, that's the place, that is the weakness that I keep looking at, interior offensive line. Not that that's novel. That's what we were looking at mm-hmm. last year.
Yeah.
But I, with offseason, and just like Seth, I'm looking at that interior and I'm like, I don't still feel great about it. Maybe mm-hmm. that I could be convinced when I actually see these guys get out here. But there's real questions about the interior as with the guards they brought in, Lakin Tomlinson, Ed Ingram, all of them. I still think there's a good amount of questions and concerns in there.
Yep.
Yeah, it is funny. It's funny because Blake Fisher was a second-round pick last year, and yet somehow when Ursary gets drafted in the second round here this year, and you're psychologically you're almost like, oh, well, of course he'll start right away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, check it out.
Right.
He's a second-round pick, and first round is when you tend to think, oh, those guys will start right away.
Yeah.
You just, I'm talking about myself in that too. Like, I keep wanting to slot him in there as a starter, and it's just not that simple.
We'll see. So, question of the day today.
Yes.
A lot of stuff. A lot of stuff.
A lot of things feed into the question of the day.
Yeah. So, obviously, I mean, all the things happening in the draft. Something happened on Twitter with the Patriots that made me go, oh, I know someone immediately regretted that. So that got me thinking, what's something that you did or said that you immediately regretted?
I miss what happened with the Patriots. What happened?
All right, I'll give you the juice here. So the Patriots.
We'll answer your question.
They selected a man with Mr. Irrelevant, that final pick in the seventh round. Pick number 257. The man's name is Kobe Minor.
Yeah.
To which point, the social media team for the Patriots tweeted out a Minor on their account, obviously alluding to the... Kendrick Lamar, Drake beef.
Oh, God.
And I was like, immediate regret. Immediate regret had to be there.
And immediately deleted.
Oh, my God.
And immediately deleted.
And Drake's in the suing mode right now,
correct.
Too.
He's lawyered up.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do not piss off multimillionaires, man. Mine would be, and I know the prank phone call thing
is in there, too.
It's got to be in there. Jeff Ulbrich's son. Organizing a prank call to to Shedeur Sanders. Reportedly, there was one to Tyler Warren and a couple other people, too, mm-hmm. that were not Ulbrich. They only prank called Shedeur. Yeah.
It did seem like I've seen all sorts of different reporting on this as we're all trying to figure out what's happening.
The Falcons denied those other ones.
Okay.
I don't know if they have a reason to lie or not. Like, it's already embarrassing for everybody involved, right, including Ulbrich and the team and everything else. I had a prank calling situation in college that got me on disciplinary probation. Now, this is back in the day before cell phones and everything. This was just landlines back in the day. And mine wasn't nearly as, wasn't setting up for nearly the emotional
and the harm.
Disappointment and harm that I think a phone call to a draft prospect saying we're drafting you is.
Yeah.
Me and a roommate, there was a dude who we knew who was in a couple of our classes who lived in the dorm next door who was a jackass. We didn't like the guy. So a couple times we'd get home late at night, we were drunk, and we would prank call the guy and just be like, hey, what was the guy's name? Jim Stryker. Hey, Jim.
Oh, we're just going to put the okay.
This is very good. It was 40 years ago, whatever it is. This is your buddy, Bill Jaharnitz from high school. Just stupid stuff like that. It was more or less just to wake the guy up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And eventually, they traced the calls after he placed some complaints to student affairs and yada, yada, yada. I wound up with 50 hours of community service.
50 hours of community? That's harsh.
Yeah. Well, it was a good gig.
Yeah.
Because I actually, my community service, you'll like this, Seth, as a former athlete. My job was to drive around on a golf cart around campus and pick up injured athletes and take them to class. So I'd be driving, I'd be done with my class. I'd get on my golf cart, look at my schedule for the day. Got to go pick up Ricky Waters. And bring him to Philo class. Okay, Ricky, I drop you off. Oh, got to go pick up Rocket Ishmael. Here we go. So I'm just driving. And that was back when Notre Dame had a lot of famous guys on the team. Yeah. So I'm like their chauffeur. It was awesome.
Did you even have to wear a humiliating vest or anything?
Nothing.
Oh, that would have been fantastic.
The vest would have been great.
Yeah. I didn't have to wear a little chauffeur's cap or anything like that. Yeah.
I remember.
And if it was NIL era, they would have tipped me probably because they would have the cash to do it. Yeah.
One time when I was like 13 years old, my dad was like lecturing me about something about treating equipment more gently. Like, cause I had slammed a door or something and we were driving and he was yelling at me and everything. And then it was quiet for a while. And then we had to stop at a gas station. He got something out of the trunk. Still very quiet. He was very mad at me. And we're driving down the road away from the gas station and the trunk pops up. And he looks in the back and he's like, oh, damn it, the trunk popped up. And I said, maybe you should have slammed it harder.
Oh, no.
And I like immediately, I was like, oh, crap. Oh, crap. Oh, no. Oh, no. Why'd I say that?
You're right.
Was your dad a punch you in the chest kind of dad?
He beat the crap out of my older brother, so I was more just terrified. He very rarely laid hands on me, but he could
rule through
tear
fear.
Me apart verbally, and he did after that. Made me feel very small.
Yeah. That's a great answer.
You know what he did? He laid the guilt trip on me about how he has to deal with these bastard kids. I'll tell you, the one piece of advice my dad gave to me that I knew was messed up at the time was when I was in fourth grade, and he told me once, he was just, I could tell he'd been like working for 72 hours straight, and he had to pick me up from basketball practice, and he said, he's driving and his eyes are all dead, he goes, I'll tell you one thing, never have kids. They sap your energy and destroy all of your goals.
Not y'all, though. Y'all are great.
To his kids. All right, Dad. Thanks.
I can't. I don't know if I can top that.
No, I can't. That is the dismount. That is it.
I got nothing. I'm speechless. All right. Seth, antibodies to you.
Antibodies and fair tidings to you and all your children.
Appreciate that.
Your life that they've ruined.
Thank you. My sons are listening. I love you. I just want them to know that. You're listening to KILT AM, KILT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey Sports Station.